got the power. You've got
my people in the East, yo, you gotta wake up. Midwest, 30 South, yo, you gotta stand up. All my homies in the West, yo, you gotta wake up.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up.
WRUULP Savannah. You are tuned in to the highest use your way twice a week in an hour just for you. All right. Yes, today is the morning of October the 8th. I'm sorry, no, the 18th. Thank you. Thank you. Let's get it together. Carrie, it is your morning, October the 18th, and there is a lot going on. We'll have a great interview this morning, but just so you know, I'm going to have a special show on Saturday, and a good friend of mine will be coming on to talk about her personal experience serving in Afghanistan and having personal connection as a member of the armed forces as a retired vet who has been serving in the armed forces. And, yes, we will make sure we have her on. And so stay tuned to our show, which will air on Saturday. And I will be going to DC next weekend for work and hanging out with some friends. So we will have a live show this Saturday and next Saturday, but the Saturday after next will be a live recorded show. And I want to make that a special show on catching you up on what's going on with the Weeping Time, circled in with, of course, local news. All right, so what is going on in Afghanistan? You know, what's going on in Afghanistan has anybody who served in the military very upset. And the basis for that is that 20 years of work, they feel went down the drain because of how women and women are being treated. Women will be treated, and the fact that the Taliban is anti-LGBT, you know, making them learn a very militant form of the Islamic faith, very militant. To me, it's just very anti anything that is open. Whether it's women's rights, whether it's propagandizement. It's an extreme form of totalitarian rule. It is everything that is anti-democratic. And even more so, it's even more than a theocracy, because there are some very amazing theocratic states in the world that practice peace and practice love and practice openness. But this is not the type of theocratic government that you would want to live in. It's repressive. Women are going to trying to get to the capital of Kabul to get on a American flight. There's some 15,000 Americans still over in Afghanistan that are waiting to come home. Those big planes put about 1,000 people. There was one that you saw on Monday where over 800 people were in one of the first, or the last to leave, not the first, but one of the last to leave on Monday, but one of the first flights out. And people were literally running and hanging on for life to the plane, on the exterior of the plane. And you saw them falling off the plane from thousands of feet in the air as it was lifting off to come to the United States. And people were literally gambling on the sense of even a death from what they were about to encounter, trying to live, trying to hang on for dear life to freedom. This is not a Democrat or Republican argument. And I know that there's sides of the aisle that will use this as a Democrat and Republican argument. One, to get a Republican pro-military president in. And one that will try to say that, you know, it is a failure for Democrats. And people that are Democrats can call out a Democratic president. Doesn't necessarily mean that they need to replace a Democratic president with Biden. It doesn't mean that we need to ask him to resign. It doesn't mean that Kamala Harris will be any better. But this is a poor judgment for the president to pull out, to the degree of the chaos that has ensued. And I don't think that there is a right move left or right. We inherently know that this is wrong. If you're a Democrat, you can call out President Biden for this is not a good move. But then you could also point fingers at the Taliban. But for military and their viewpoint, and this is where I want to hear from somebody who has the in-depth knowledge of being there, first-hand experience, because people want to isolate and try to say, well, it's this and it's that. Well, it goes back decades and generations before some of us were even alive and existed. Before there was Charlie Wilson's war putting weapons in hands for people that had, you know, third world countries like Afghanistan and other North African states to have access to being able to protect themselves. Generations later, they sold the weapons, it gets into the wrong hands, and then there is the terrorist groups, then there's 9/11, and there was points of leading up to 9/11. There was our occupation in the fact that Saudi Arabia pointed fingers in the wrong state we went to. We went and we took out Osama bin Laden, but that didn't really take out, you know, the trail of people coming after him. You may take off the source, but the source had children. The source didn't die. You didn't eradicate the entire seed of the issue. And then there's people who said Russia said that, you know, Russia warned, we've been working over there for years, don't go over there. And then we're in conflict with Russia, and Russia's pushing back. And then, you know, it's just a whole thing that there is constant conflict in states that are undemocratic. And yes, there's places where democracy doesn't work. But 20 years for the military, 20 years of work pushed down into the ground. Women that are already telling us and speaking out. There was a graffiti artist, and I've shared this on my personal page, and if you follow me, I'm CJ Smith on my personal page. And I saw something shared and I reshared it on my page about a graffiti artist. And I'm trying to get to my page so I can specifically share this with you. It's a graffiti artist, Shamisha Hassani. She's the first graffiti artist who wrote words on Facebook this week in response to her country's takeover, called Nightmare Afghanistan. And literally, she's holding a keyboard. She's wearing blue, which is symbolic for peace. In her dress, you can find, like, the top of the homes for people who live in Kabul. And back behind her is the Taliban with their guns. And they look like Osama bin Laden. And basically what that symbolizes is the response to her country's swift takeover by the Taliban, where girls are fearful for losing their freedom, that have been winning since 2001 and now feel their freedom has been taken away and they're crushed. This means that women will be persecuted. It means that men will persecute also members of the LGBT, anybody who's different, doesn't fall in line with their militant totalitarian rule that is anti anything of change, anything of progress. And there have been reports of people who fled Kabul from ordering Taliban-controlled parts of the country, ordering them over unmarried girls and women to become wives for the Taliban fighters. And if they didn't, flogging them to death and making them have male chaperones. Taliban forces largely control the capital, leaving no sanctuary for women to get away from these brutal extremists. There's groups like Women for Afghan Women, a nonprofit organization which has been fighting for the rights of Afghan women for 20 years. CARE, one of the world's largest humanitarian organizations, which has a long history of helping people, women specifically in Afghanistan. And for more actions, there's also, a mighty girl out there, Shamisa's Powerful Work, which is on shamisahassani.net. Children book about the lives under girls under Taliban rule. There's books like Nashreen's Secret School, an award-winning novel, The Breadwinner. So you can check that out. So there's a lot going on more to the story. A lot more to the story. And the CIA is warning of rapid collapse of Afghanistan and looking to how did the U.S. get this wrong? How did we get here to unravel 20 years in just a matter of months? Again, remove yourself from one way or the other right now and just look at the truth. I know that we want to be one-sided in this country, but look at not being defensive here and calling a spade a spade. The Taliban seized provinces against Afghanistan in the last few weeks. The CIA's intelligence assessments began to warn to increase stark terms about the potential for rapid collapse of Afghan military and government. Current and former U.S. officials. In the end, the CIA's description of what a worst-case scenario could look like was pretty close to what happened. The White House would not confirm President Biden ever received a dire forecast for his national security team. The president himself disputed intelligence and suggested the increasing likelihood the Afghan military would fold. The outcome emerged, president standing by his decision to end U.S. military operations in Afghanistan. Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed. But let's go to where the media is also getting this wrong. I mean, the media's failure on Afghanistan, too, in a lot of capacities, to just talk facts. You know, most coverage focused on criticizing Biden rather than looking at the argument. Media outlets relied on responsible people for two decades when there's been constant failure in Afghanistan. There are legitimate criticisms to the way that Biden executed the withdrawal so harshly and just uprooted the thing. Biden's promise to restore confidence in the presidency reflects a failure to really deliver a steady leadership and a gradual withdrawal. The quote that former CIA director and Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta says, the fact that Biden didn't really spend much time on the issue and crossing the fingers and hoping chaos would not result, well, it happened. Here we are. And you know, he said that the development of the Afghan army and the police force was one target and they were doing the job. Well, back in 2011, Charlie Rose said that the military campaign in Afghanistan seriously weakened the Taliban and the Afghan people were able to control their own faith. Well, yeah, maybe then under the American occupation in Afghanistan, but not now. Recently in June, Panetta was touting progress and been in the building up of Afghanistan security forces and said, we did not make gains in Afghanistan, we made progress. We've improved the society in terms of how they operate, and they saw the Afghan military to do very effective operations. The failure of the Afghan government security forces to survive 2021 made Biden's withdrawal chaotic. The institutions touted Panetta, even for the short period of time evacuations could have occurred in a more orderly fashion and not just in full chaos. There's been a history of poor judgments and trajectory of the country's progress. Instead, we have to rein in and blame Biden for a shared failure from the country's leaders and how President Biden decided to just uproot the thing in comparison to a gradual withdrawal. So there is way more in-depthness that we need to do. But basically, the one-sided coverage of the military withdrawal from Afghan mirrors the mistakes and the run-up to the Iraq War. Then Bush administration officials quoted sources. They had wrong sources. The voices of the anti-war groups and pro-groups. The opposition to Democrats. The opposition to Republicans. It has been a very one-sided media depending on what source you use. So, when you're looking at who is to blame, who's not to blame, we really need to pay attention to how this is really affecting the people. I think that we've gotten so political in this country, and this is one of the primary reasons I started the Verbitude Hour, the mediocrity. Getting away from the mediocrity and just focusing on the facts. And the facts is there is no political judgment on who's to blame, because there have been several presidents that have had their hand into Afghanistan. You know, we could point to both Bushes. We could point to Obama. We could point to Trump. And we can point to Biden. We can point all the way back to Charlie Wilson's war. Even before then, there have been so many steps to arrive where we are historically. And we could point to how people in Afghanistan have chose to live. We could point to the leaders over there. We could point to Russia and Russia's involvement, Russia's constant fight with the United States, with the UN Security Council, under President Obama. We could point fingers in a lot of different directions, but what we really need to focus is getting away from the political argument, putting all the facts in front of us, and really getting to the steps of where this has been misguided judgments historically in the experiment of a country which is in constant turmoil over a terrorist totalitarian group that is autonomous with being anti anything progress and positive. When it comes down to it, would you want to live there? Is this how you would want? I mean, would you rather hold on to a plane going thousands of feet into the air and die that way, falling to your death, knowing that at least you fought, than being in the consuming chaos of not knowing where society is going to be in the onslaught of Nazi Germany in Afghanistan for those people? I mean, really. Okay. Let's shift gears. There is going to be a town hall this Thursday, August the 19th at 6:30 p.m. at the Ralph Gilbert Museum. Okay? So, if you are not able to go to the one in the redistricting and reapportionment town hall hosted by the Georgia General Assembly, there is going to be one on Thursday. That is tomorrow. And you can go to a couple different pages to find it. You can go to the Derek Mallow, Representative Derek Mallow's page to find it if you're on Facebook. You can go to the People's Agenda page to find it on Facebook. Okay. And let me tell you more about it. All right, so they're going to be talking about, it's a redistricting town hall. It's from 6:30 to 8. You do need, because of COVID, they're only taking a certain amount of people. So you do need to, if you can, sign up. You can click on the page. It's hosted by the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus. And it will be at 460 Martin Luther King Drive, Savannah, Georgia, on Thursday, which is tomorrow, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Ralph Gilbert Civil Rights Museum. Okay? So you do need to sign up online. I have reserved my spot. I will let you know how it goes. Also, last night, the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission has been holding public meetings to talk about the comprehensive plan for the city of Savannah. They have short and long-term goals for redevelopment and preservation. The virtual public meetings are a chance for the public to share thoughts and feedback. You can check that out on the mpc.compplan2040.org. The last one was last night. Last week at the Moses Jackson Center. No, there was one last night at the Eastside Community Center. The next one will be next Tuesday at Windsor Forest Community Center at 6:30 at Windsor Forest Community Center, 308 Briar Cliff Circle, Savannah, Georgia, 31419. You can also call the MPC at 912-651-1440 for more information. All right, so not only is Chatham County suffering from mismanagement, chaos, not only is the Board of Education not listening and speaking to parents, just more and more. I just see another article popping up. But I was going to the article. Not only is it just in Chatham County, it's actually in the whole freaking region. It's also in Jasper County. Jasper, there were students that communicated that students didn't get home till 10 o'clock last night off the bus. There is a shortage of buses. And it's more than just the Department of Education. It is the fact that we have shopped out, whether it's Jasper County, whether it's Chatham County, we've shopped out services to third-party bus organizations, companies, that are hired by another third-party employment agency where they're not getting enough qualified drivers. And here's the pickle. You know, I had a conversation because I've been flowing through ideas in my brain about how can we get rideshare drivers to work as a part-time job for morning shift or afternoon shift. I was told that there have been several rideshare drivers. This is just my own personal experiment and exploration to understand that there have been more than a few, just in the city of Savannah, rideshare drivers who have applied to be bus drivers. But they have been told by the organization, if they're driving for rideshare, they have to be fully committed to a 40-hour work week, which means that they're not hiring for part-time drivers. Now, when I was a little old girl, I remember some of our coaches picking up extra hours driving in the morning, driving in the afternoon. Like, some of the assistant coaches would do that. I remember my middle school assistant basketball coach, was also a sub bus driver and had his own route 2 or 3 days a week that they would mix it up, but they made it work. There were people who drove truck and had 2 days a week that they drove the bus Monday and Friday. Like, that has been taken out of the system, shopped out to third-party organizations that are not finding qualified, sufficient drivers, and they have unreasonable expectations to want 40-hour work weeks. They don't have enough people. There are shortages. There is very stringent protocols by these third-party organizations. And there is then the disconnect between the parents and then the the Board of Education and the county's not listening to them. So there's more to the story once it unravels than just parents being upset. And you can't even just point the finger at the Board of Education, because whether a person was elected this last term or the term before that, that signed up for First Student, which is the primary third-party organization, then that is hired through organizations like Ronstadt or whatever employment agency to this organization. These organizations come up with like the best case scenario and it looks really good on paper, but it is not reality, to where they start pulling and making exceptions to get better drivers, fill in the gaps. Instead, they leave shortages, which then fall on the Board of Education in these counties to come up with a plan where there is no plan, where kids are getting off at 10 o'clock. There is short funding, short supply of drivers, and then it's upset parents who are trying to figure out what's going on. And they're just trying their best. And then you don't complain if you're in a school zone, because the parents are having to pick up their kids and drop them off because they can't rely. Or I've been hearing, just even with rideshare drivers telling me personally, they have put their kids on the city bus. The city bus. But, you know, the city bus has its different operation, because a school bus is for a school zone. It is supposed to tailor to get kids to school on time. But because it's not operating efficiently, parents can't blame the city bus, because the city bus isn't built around primary, you know, responsibility to getting those kids on time. That's what the school bus system is for. It's also public transit. So there is a multi-level failure going on in counties, and parents are upset because they don't know who to talk to and who to ask, because there's a disconnect, because no one wants to take responsibility. Well, when there's a lawsuit in these counties, whether it's South Carolina or Savannah, there are going to be people upset. I guarantee people are going to be upset when a kid gets hurt. There's going to be a change. Going to be a change. Guarantee it. In other news, just this morning in Bullitt County, there was a school bus that got struck from behind where 30 students were affected and involved in a crash. Well, actually, it was yesterday on Bermuda Road in Statesboro. There were no injuries reported. All right. We're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a recorded interview. It was an interesting interview, and I can't wait for you to hear it, because it is so good. But we're talking with Khalid Parikh, who is the CEO and founder of Fair Banking. Fair Banking aims to solve the wealth gap for immigrants and people of color. You'll find out what the fair halal banking practices are, which are designed to empower financial freedom and make home ownership more attainable and eliminate excessive bank fees. So let's go to that interesting interview when we come back after the break. And you're listening to the Verb Altitude Hour on WRUULP Savannah.
Remote Area Medical, RAM, is a major nonprofit provider of pop-up clinics delivering free, quality dental, vision, and medical care to underserved and underinsured individuals. RAM will be in Savannah August 28th and 29th to provide free dental care. The clinic will be held at the Garden City Recreation Center, 160 Priscilla D. Thomas Way in Garden City. Clinic doors open at 6 a.m. on Saturday, August 28th. The parking lot will be open no later than 12:01 a.m. Saturday, August 28th, and remain open during the entire clinic period. This portion of WRUULP Savannah Soundings programming is brought to you by listeners and the Ships of the Sea Museum. The Ships of the Sea Museum is a member of the National Trust for Historic Preservation's Distinctive Destinations Program. The William Scarborough House is the earliest example of the use of Greek Revival architecture in the domestic setting, and this year is the 200th anniversary of the Scarborough House. Find out more about Ships of the Sea Museum at the website shipsofthesea.org.
What does it mean when we say that WRUU is a community radio station? It doesn't just mean that we invite the community to create programming, and it doesn't just mean that we are a voice for the community. It also means that we are counting on the community to keep us going, and you are the community. Almost all of our modest budget comes from small annual or monthly donations from listeners like you. You get to enjoy our community-focused programming because many others have stepped forward to do their part. Now do your part by joining our community of listener donors. Go to WRUU.org right now and make a one-time or monthly donation. And thank you for supporting Savannah's community radio station, 107.5 FM.
All right. Well, welcome back. We're going to be talking with Perrick Khalil about halal banking. Khalid Perrick. I'm sorry. He is a very impressive guy. He came to the United States with only $100 in his pocket. He was determined to share his banking practices after he immigrated here to the U.S. from India. Like I said, he only had $100 in his pocket over 22 years. He founded the AMSSYS Group, the Amos Group, which is now valued at over $350 million. He's going to talk about how membership-based fintech startup helped to aim consumers to empower consumers with ethical banking, lending, and investments, and retirement services that improve traditional profit-driven banking models. So we're going to go to that interview with him. Hang on to your horses. We're going to enjoy this. Thank you for listening to the Verbatute Hour on WRUULP Savannah.
Thank you so much for doing this morning. You're calling in a Thank you so much for doing this morning. You're calling in a Savannah, Georgia on WRUULP Savannah. And I'm excited to speak with you. I hope that you are this morning as well.
Likewise.
Okay. So you are the founder of the CEO and founder of Fair Banking. This is an important topic, especially for our area who's been badly hit. And I've been involved myself with some groups here that include some first, third, fourth, and fifth generation Americans. And you are going to be talking about the wealth gap for immigrants and people of color. So this is a very, very important topic for folks here in Savannah, Georgia.
I'm excited to speak about it and see how I can help.
So how did your immigrant experience encourage you to create FAIR?
I created FAIR as a way to pay it forward. I personally funded the technology investment for FAIR and had a group of individual investors who were really passionate about this cause. On a personal level, I founded FAIR to help solve the challenges I faced as an immigrant myself, coming to this country with $100 in my pocket. Currently, people are paying thousands of dollars a year in hidden bank fees worldwide. The average American pays $329 in bank fees every year. And most of these people are living paycheck to paycheck. right? So, and plus these problems are exacerbated for people of color. Blacks and Latinos typically pay twice in banking fees as other Americans. And FAIR is a membership-based single source of truth banking where we never charge a single dollar in banking fees to our consumers.
Wow. So can you talk about the aims of problems that they that FAIR are trying to solve? Like, I know one of the things that you all are doing are working for Black Latino consumers who pay twice as much, like you said, for fees than the majority white culture.
Yeah, so look, we want FAIR to be America's wealth-building bank. Wealth-building neobank. What does that mean? Now, typically, a lot of middle-class Americans who don't have a lot of money in their bank account, they are not able to get really good returns on the money that they have in their bank accounts because the banks don't pay anything. So FAIR has created a special wealth-building account that pays up to 4% on your dividend account. Money is fully insured and it's completely liquid. So imagine it's money sitting in your, savings dividend account, your wealth account. You can use it anytime you want, but if it's sitting there, you are earning up to 4% annually on your money. But you know what? We pay you your dividends monthly, and that's compounded back to your, to your principal. So you are making more and more money every single month by just simply leaving the money in the bank account and not using it. You can use it if you want to, but if it's there, you're making up to 4% on your money.
So what makes halal banking a desirable option for American customers?
So, that's a great question, right? Not everyone is familiar with the term halal.
No, I've never heard of it.
Okay. Simply put, it is an Arabic word that means permissible. Okay? That's all it means. Halal means permissible. Let's put it this way. Anyone who has a moral objection to paying interest or excessive fees would find halal banking to be suitable banking choice. And I believe most Americans, no matter what their race or religion or creed, would say that they would prefer not to pay any interest or fees with relation to mortgages or unnecessary banking penalties, right?
Yeah.
Think about it. Americans shouldn't be penalized for putting money in a bank they're supposed to trust, the very place which is supposed to be designed to protect and grow their money, right? This is where halal banking comes in. This is where FAIR comes in. FAIR makes it possible for you to save your money, keep you away from unnecessary fees, and build your wealth, right, safely. And FAIR has a variety of financial products that American consumers would be inclined to part in that they feel like it's doing justice to them.
You know, a lot of people pay a lot of interest to their home, like homes and cars, and even like their student debt. I've learned a lot as a PhD student in student debt. Like, you're spending a lot when people like rush to consolidate. But like that interest really takes a good percentage of what they're paying back instead of towards the principal.
Yeah, typically, talking about student loan, a doctor's first 4 to 5 years has, all the majority of the salary in a doctor when he starts earning money, the first 4 to 5 years is used to pay back the interest and the student loans that they have accumulated over the course of their career, of their professional student career, right?
Mm-hmm. So how can FAIR Neobank help people of color and immigrants build wealth?
Again, this FAIR's practices could benefit everyone. FAIR is a bank for every single American out there. Why it matters so much for immigrant communities and people of color, think about it, right? Black communities, when you look at generational wealth, they are the ones who currently don't have access and who don't have benefit, from the high yield savings accounts, right? Because you have to be a private bank, you have to have a certain amount of money in your bank before even professionals speak with you, right? Because they make money on your money. Therefore, in order to reduce the wealth gaps, we have products in mind. That's why we created America's wealth building account. well steadily through a very thoughtfully designed dividend structure that can bring them up to 4% annually, return on their money, which is the highest, absolutely highest dividend rate in the country, and we pay you monthly on it. So they can, and of course we are super transparent, so they are seeing their money grow every month in their bank account. It's not like, okay, we'll pay you after a year, we'll pay you after 6 months. No, they see it every single month in their bank account.
Wow. You know, one of the things I read preparing for this interview this morning that about your organization that was shared is talking about ethical investments and not investing in companies like tobacco or other harmful industries that have low labor standards or harm the environment. I thought that was very conscientious about investment.
Yes, you know, we want to stick with our ESG grade investment. So ESG is environment, social, and governance. We want to make sure that any products that we bring in front of our consumers are ESG compliant, meaning that they are best for the environment, they don't harm anybody, and they are good to invest in because they promote, they take away from global warming and other stuff. But the most important thing is, you know, they're also high, you know, return investments that people are really not looking at. So ESG investments is something that we are really, really focused on.
Wow. And what are some of the most, the services you're most excited about for FAIR and why?
So, you know, we are seeing a big uptick of people opening up. Think about it, right? Nobody wants to change their primary bank account. It's hard. You have everything connected to it. And we are okay with that, right? We want the consumers to think of FAIR as a secondary bank account, right? They can, move some of their savings money in it, and they can make the highest return, in the industry, right? Up to 4%. Now, as they see that FAIR is doing everything else, they can slowly, slowly transition, right? So the feature, where we're seeing a lot of people opening up accounts and using it is people are using their accounts for creating wealth, using the wealth building accounts where they make up to 4%. But, later part of the year, we are also launching, our home, auto, no interest equity based financing, which is going to be really, really good for the consumers. We have our investments platform coming up later this year. It's very exciting. So the idea is for our consumers to, when they go to FAIR, they should be able to execute all four of their major financial journeys into one platform. Think about it, right? Banking, lending, investments, and retirement, all from one platform. Plus, we also allow our immigrant communities to send money back home. FAIR members can do international money transfer instantly. Their recipients get their money in 30 seconds, and we give the highest currency exchange rate because we don't make a spread on the currency rate, right? So as a member of FAIR, you become a member of FAIR, you can send international money transfer, international remittance for free. You never have to pay a fee to process that. Typical other money transfer services charge you $9.99 and $5.99 to send money. We don't charge you a single dollar to send money to your home country.
Wow. Where can our listeners go to get more information if they want to check out more about FAIR?
The easiest place to go is www.bankwithfair.com. Again, it's bankwithfair.com, bankwithfair.com.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. Like I said, this was like vital information for our listeners.
Thank you, Ms. Gary. You have a great rest of the day.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
All right. So, there's a few more points that I want to share this morning. And, California school district is now requiring masks in LA. And they intersected this into the school district in LA has intersected this into a loophole. And a loophole stems from requiring students to wear a mask as part of the dress code. So it's now part of the dress code to wear a mask. You know, and if you've been paying attention, whether it's in school or wherever, there have been schools across the country affected by students going back to school. Just alone in Chatham County, there's over 4,000 students in quarantine after 350 students in the school district have tested positive. Screven County and Ware County that have been badly hit, and even in Effingham County, they are closing schools through after Labor Day and not reopening until the second week of September, the week of my birthday, because the Delta variant is so serious. One of my former students has the Delta variant and has been on a respirator for the last few months, last few weeks over the last month. Added with pneumonia. There have been numerous people dying that were anti-vaxxers. That wasn't my student. My student did get COVID and has got the vaccine. President Biden is now talking about a third booster shot. Those who are immunodeficient, like myself, my father, will be able to get that booster shot, according to President Biden, through the government non-insurance channels, public channels, through beginning of September the 12th. But you can already get, I think, a booster shot if you go through your insurance and you go to like Walgreens or a pharmacy to get the booster shot. In other news, things that we're not seeing because we're so fixated on COVID and how badly handled that was handled in the United States and how badly we're still dealing with politics and people skeptical not getting the vaccine, people skeptical on both sides. They're making it very political. There's something else going on that we see the language shifting on Fox, that they're now reporting COVID cases. And it seems as if shifting the language to get people to get the shot because people are dying and falling off. And there's funerals on the onslaught of people not wanting to get the vaccine or not wanting to practice social distancing and not follow the science. Whether you agree with where the science is, I'm looking at the number of death tolls. But one of the things that we see left out is the fires, the historic droughts that we're seeing in parts of the West that BBC is picking up. And, now that California is having water restrictions. And besides that, one thing that we might have missed is the California police officer that was found dead and inflamed. All right, well, that's been enough for today. Thank you for listening to the Verb Attitude Hour on WRUULP. Savannah, please pay attention to getting the vaccine. Go get tested. Make sure you're safe. We want you safe. We want you to live here at the Verb Attitude Hour on WRUULP. Savannah, anything that you heard on today's show is not that of WRUU, its license holder itself. Listener discretion was advised. The language is objectionable. It's not that of WRUU, its license holder or its staff. We're going right into background briefing. Thank you for listening.